This is a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station.
7:36 a.m. You are listening to The Morning Run. I'm Shazana Mokhtar with Wong Xiaoning and Keith Kam. We are turning our attention now to what's happening over in the Middle East. Over the weekend, Iran launched a barrage of missiles and drones on Israel 2 weeks after a suspected Israeli strike on its consulate in Damascus that killed 13 people.
The assault represented the first time Iran had ever directly attacked Israel, although the vast majority of the projectiles were downed before reaching Israeli territory. So the only serious injury reported within Israel was a 7-year-old who was hurt by shrapnel. And since then, Israel's war cabinet, they've met several times and discussed their options with all its main partners.
So far, US President Biden has urged the Netanyahu government to show restraint and reiterated that the US will not take part in a counter-offensive against Iran. Meanwhile, bombardments and fighting continues in Gaza with close to 34,000 Palestinians killed as the war draws close to this 200th day. So following Iran's attack on Israel, what are the risks of wider regional conflict?
For some thoughts on this, we have on the line with us Dr. James Dorsey, Senior Fellow at the S. Rajaratnam School of International Studies. Good morning, James. Thanks for joining us. So the recent attack by Iran on Israel was unprecedented, even though no targets were directly hit. What is the likelihood of a full-scale conflict erupting as a result of the weekend events?
That's the $64,000 question. I think if we... either of us hadn't had the answer to that, we wouldn't be sitting here. Fact of the matter is, the ball is at this point in Israel's court. And whether it responds and how it responds will dictate what Iran's response to the response is. And the danger, of course, is that you get this escalating cycle that ultimately expands into an all-out war. Now, it's very clear that the Iranians do not want that to happen. It's also very clear that the United States and other members of the international community do not want that to happen. Israel does not necessarily want that to happen. But the problem is that both Prime Minister Netanyahu and Israel itself are torn in different directions. From Israel's perspective, as the government and the state, deterrence and superiority have always been pillars of the Israeli defense strategy. A failure of Israel to respond to what was a massive attack, whether it was intended to harm or not, being neither here nor there, and the first attack ever directly from Iranian territory on Iran, more or less sort of in the Israeli defense logic, forces it to respond, because otherwise its concept of deterrence will have been destroyed and Iran's concept of deterrence will have been enhanced. But on the other hand, then, of course, you have all the other factors. You have the pressure on Netanyahu from two sides. One from the United States and others in the international community not to act. And on the other hand, from the far right within his coalition government and segments of the Israeli population, not necessarily a majority, who do want him to respond.
James, this is something a bit perplexing to me. I mean, Iran's decision to send missiles and drones into Israel, they gave them quite a lot of notice. So I was wondering, what was the purpose of this? At the same time, though, Iran is also facing quite a lot of political unrest with protests against its own regime. How much is this is deflecting and how much is this is in response to what happened in Damascus?
I think there's a certain degree of justification to the Israeli argument that it was intended, with other words, intended to harm. I would somewhat soften that argument by saying that Iran certainly took the risk that that this attack would cause considerable harm, and if it caused considerable harm, would have definitely led to an escalation into a war. But I think at the same time, it's clear that the Iranians do not want an escalation of the war. There are all kinds of signs. They've signaled in, ahead. They didn't use their most accurate and most powerful arsenal. So there are signs, and clearly that they want this to end now. It's clear, those things make clear that they really did not want an escalation, and that this was more to show their capability and their willingness than to really cause the kind of harm that would have sparked a war.
James, were you surprised that other players in the Middle East also participated in thwarting the Iranian drone and missile attack?
Not really. I think there are two elements to this. First of all, those drones and missiles were obviously violating their airspace. Mm. And I think that they wanted to be seen to be defending their airspace. They also wanted to be seen that they're not just going to simply bow to Iran and allow Iran to violate their airspace. On the other hand, I think that they were walking a tightrope, particularly Jordan, more perhaps than any other country, because of its demographic constellation, with a majority, or at least half of its population, being of Palestinian descent. But they're walking a tightrope because obviously their actions by many in public opinion are going to be seen as having defended Israel at a moment that you have the devastation of Gaza.
And if we can take a look at what Israel could do next, we have seen President Biden appeal for restraint, but as you've mentioned, I think Netanyahu is at a rock and a hard place in terms of what he needs to do. Does the situation actually benefit him? Because for as long as Israel is in the state of emergency, then he gets to remain in power, essentially.
I think it's a double-edged sword. With other words, the argument, of course, is he has a personal interest for the very reasons that you quoted. The longer there's war, the longer he's likely to be in office. But on the other hand, this is a balancing act in which, he also risks, if he goes with what are his personal interests and what the far right wants, and launches a massive military response to the Iranian attack, then he could or could not lose support in the West. He may also be betting that in the ultimate analysis, countries like the United States, whatever happens, will feel that they cannot be seen to dumping Israel in a fight with, of all people, of all countries, Iran. Mm. So I think he is in a difficult position. Israel has multiple options. It doesn't necessarily have to be a massive military attack. It could be a cyber attack, for example. It could be assassinations for which Israel does not need to take responsibility, but the message is clear. With other words, there are a number of actions that Israel could take which shows that it is not deterred, but which are at a level that Iran may not necessarily feel it has to respond in an escalatory fashion.
What about the other Middle East political players, the UAE, Saudi, Jordan and Egypt? They were all in discussions with Israel at one point. They all seem to be on the opposite side of Iran. Does this clearly draw a line between the belligerents in this conflict?
No, I think it's more complicated than that. You've had all of those countries in the Gulf in general condemning the Israeli attack on the embassy in, or in any case, being cautious about the Israeli attack on the Iranian consulate in Damascus. But they've also all said that if there were an escalation, they would not be allowing the United States or Israel to use bases in their country or their airspace to attack Iran. So they're trying to forge a middle ground here because they realize that they could become targets in an all-out war.
So, James, does this really complicate the ability to find any form of peace or to create a ceasefire then in Gaza?
It distracts attention from Gaza. But unless you really get an escalation, I think that will only be temporarily and the attention will go back to Gaza. Whether this hardens Hamas's position in the ceasefire negotiations, I think it remains to be seen. It could well harden the Hamas leadership in Gaza as opposed to the Hamas leadership in exile. There are differences between them about the negotiations as well as about the future strategy of Hamas. But nonetheless, I think it really all depends on what happens next and what the consequence of that is.
James, thanks very much for speaking with us. That was Dr. James Dorsey, Senior Fellow at the S. Rajaratnam School of International Studies, giving us his take on what's happening in the Middle East, particularly in terms of the escalating conflict between Iran and Israel.
Yeah, this just complicates the issue. And James really brought up a valid point that it distracts from what is really happening on the ground in Gaza for the moment, right? And it's so important that we remain focused in finding a ceasefire, an immediate one, because the plight of the Palestinians in the Gaza are just terrible. The conditions now are just unlivable.
And we keep hearing that being repeated over and over again from officials from the UN, from people on the ground. We can continue to hope that there will be progress on that front. 7:49 in the morning, we're going to head into some messages, but we'll come back to take a look at what's happening in Malaysia's property sector. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
You have been listening to a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station. For more stories of the same kind, download the BFM app.